Welcome to Real Conversations, exploring the meaning behind the music. Hi, I'm Reverend Jeannie Kataoka.
And I'm Al Yankee. Join with us for a deep dive into the inspiration and meaning behind the music of New Thought, as important New Thought artists share the story of their creative process and their spiritual journey.
Real Conversations is a rare opportunity to take a look behind the curtain to discover the connections between the stories, the music, the artists, and you. So let's dive right in to Real Conversations, exploring the meaning behind the music.
Hi, Al and I are here this afternoon with Reverend Richard McDeasy, and I have a little background information on him for you. He dedicates his life to positive spiritual music for all faiths. His passions are posse music and the spiritual offshoot of posse known as New Thought music. A resident of Chesapeake, Virginia, he is president and co-founder of Empower Music and Arts. Richard travels the country with his interfaith ministry, teaching through retreats and workshops the message of peace, self-worth, and the uniting power of music. He likes to say, "My cup runneth over and is making a big mess on the floor." Welcome to Real Conversations, Reverend Richard McDeasy.
Oh, sorry. I was cleaning up my mess. That's funny. That one goes back a long ways. It's great to be here. I'm really honored that y'all asked me. Thank you.
Oh, we're glad you're here too. So let's jump right in. The first song that we're going to do today is My Choice. And let's listen to it. We've been talking a little bit. Let's listen to Can't Play the Blues by Reverend Richard McDeasy.
All my life I had to struggle. I paid some heavy dues, squeaking out a living, playing these here blues. Then one day my music made me a millionaire. I bought a big old mansion with central heat and air. Now I got more money than I know how to use. Got everything a man could want, but I ain't got the blues. Success for me could only lead to my impending doom, 'cause I can't play the blues in an air-conditioned room. A smaller piece of pie. With all my fame and fortune, I can't identify. I lost the inspiration that came natural from the start. I had to hire a mean old woman just to break my heart. But now my life's too easy. I think I'm getting soft. I used to play the blues all day, but now I just play golf. Fame is rearranged, I'll have to change my tune, 'cause I can't play the blues in an air-conditioned room. No, you know what I'm saying? It's hard to play the blues when life is so good. I'm strange, but first thing in the morning, I'm gonna make a change. I'll give away all my money, gonna move back to the shack. I'll do whatever I gotta do to get that feeling back. Well, I know I'll be feeling better with nothing left to lose. When times were bad, the less I had, the better I played the blues. I'll buy myself some cherry wine and high. Conditioned room. If I should
This, I had to have this one because I love Karen Drucker's I Lost My Right to Sing the Blues.
Right. So that's why
I thought, well, did one inspire the other? Or I don't know. It doesn't really matter. They're both very fun. So how did you come up with this?
Well, this is one of, I think, the only song on the album that I did not write or co-write. It's a dedication to my good friend, Rich Fagan, who's a hit songwriter back in Nashville. He had many, many hits. One of my mentors and best friends, and he passed away. I usually put one Rich Fagan song on all my albums. This one I loved because of the Karen Drucker song. It was perfect, but I had an opportunity to perform and see him perform his song, but also perform with him at the Bluebird Cafe when he would perform it there. And of course, blues is one of my favorite genres to sing and perform. So it was a perfect choice for this album. I'm going to say, which Rich song was I going to put on this album? That was it. It had been recorded by the Blues Brothers before, and just one of my favorites of his. So, and I try to do the arrangement the way that Rich did it, would do it at the Bluebird Cafe. So it's the ba-da, ba-da's, those are all him, and singing backups, that arrangement and all the backup vocals were kind of Rich's arrangement. So I wanted it as a salute to him to kind of give it that taste of that folks that ever saw him do it at the Bluebird Cafe would recognize it.
So you do all your own arrangements for these things?
Oh yeah, pretty much. I definitely do the arrangements. I'm co-producing, and this album though was produced by Daniel, who really did most of the heavy lifting. Of course, I had my input, but once Daniel puts his magic on something, you know, there's not a whole lot left to do with it. So
Daniel
Namath, I'm sorry.
There we go.
Yeah. Oh, and of course.
And what's the name of the album? Because I think we've missed that so far.
The album is called Wall Free World. And my wife and I were in Prague. And of course, in Prague, they have the Lenin Wall. And the Lenin Wall is this great wall, a great social experiment, I guess. It's a wall that people are invited to put graffiti on. And when the wall fills up and there's just no more room left on the wall, they whitewash it. And then people start adding their graffiti again. So the picture of me against that Lenin Wall, it has a huge wall free world over it. When I saw that, and it was during the time when, you know, it was 2018, when politics were going on, and Wall Free World was just something that resonated with me. And I tried to write a song, Wall Free World, and it just didn't come together. But I wanted to name the album that because of that background. And within a month, that had been painted over and started again. So that is a real frozen, that album cover is a real frozen frame in time. One of the Prague Lenin Wall filled up with all kinds of graffiti on it and then painted over and gone forever again.
Right, right. And there's so many famous walls, the Berlin Wall and the Great Wall of China, and, you know, all kind of with these same, you know, separating one group of people from another, you know.
Well, no, this wasn't separating, and I don't think you can paint graffiti on the Great Wall, but this wall was meant to be, you know, for people to come and put their thoughts and a lot of great art on it, as you can see in there. But and I don't know how it got, people thought it was the John Lennon, like Lennon, Marxist Lennon, because it was Prague, but it's actually John Lennon, the Beatle John Lennon, and I guess had a huge following there. And when he died, they created this wall as a salute to him. People
very cool
Beatle memorabilia and stuff on it at first. But.
All right, my first choice of song, also off of this Wall Free World album, is Well and Rockin'.
Oh, nice. I'm glad you like that one.
I love this song, and I just want to play it so people can hear what it is that I love so much about it. We can talk about it in a second. So here's Richard McDeasy, Well and Rockin'.
Yeah, baby.
When I wake up on a cloudy day, thinking nothing's gonna go my way, and nothing does until I hear you say, yeah, all is well and rockin' in my world. When my life feels like a traffic jam, and I forget how in the pink I am, and I remember you still give a damn, and all is well and rockin' in my.
Richard, that is so much fun.
It reminds me of James of Van Morrison a little bit.
Really?
You know, that kind of feel there. And of course, Tom Kimmel and I go back many, many years, at least 35 years that we've known each other. And it was great writing with him. And if you notice, this song sounds a little different than the other ones on the album. It's the only one I produced completely. Okay. So I basically did everything, sent it to Daniel, and let him mix it and put it together, so it has a little bit different sound than the other ones, but there was a specific way I wanted it. And
what it reminded me of, as you know, not having any background with it, but just hearing it fresh, was Joe Raposo and all those fun things he did for Sesame Street. Mm-hmm. and all the kids videos and stuff in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And the 80s. Just love that stuff. It's got so many great hooks, and it's got the happy instrumental licks. It's just a great vibe. It really has it all for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I could actually, in my mind, when I listen to it, I see like those kids' videos, or like a Sesame Street, where, you know, where they're on the street, or, you know, they're doing all these different things.
That sound like something the young people might say, you know, good to whatever got out there.
I'm a young person.
Yeah, define you. Well, I got a Huey Lewis vibe. I don't know whether it was your voice or. Because some of the Huey Lewis in the news, some of that stuff was pretty straightforward, much like this song is. So that was the vibe I got from it.
Yeah, I was just hearing Van Morrison. I liked his little sax stuff, and you know, just had that happy kind of feeling. But whichever way it comes over, you know, the album dropped in 2019, and just didn't right before COVID. I forget
the troubled times.
Yeah, so I never really got to tour with it at all. Yeah. I got the CDs. I got a bunch of CDs, and for some reason there's something about the code on the back, the barcode on the back, that it wouldn't go. I couldn't load it into Spotify, so it's never been out there yet. And I'm still working on it. I'm gonna have to get a teenager, I guess, to load it up into Spotify for me to figure that out.
Well, yeah, people are gonna wanna hear it after this.
I know.
Yeah, all the dozens of people.
I always say I made dozens of dollars from that album.
That many, right?
And I feel it's one of my best. I love the songs on it. I love the production. What Daniel did, he brought a lot of live players in, and it was really captures the essence, I think, of who I am. A lot of secular songs. You know, two or three love songs in there, and some inspirational songs, and I'm real happy and proud of it.
That's awesome. It's always good to be happy and proud of what you've done. The next song is my choice, and I picked "Who You Really Are," which is again from Wall Free World. So, why don't you tell us about that, and then we'll listen to it.
I was talking with the head of Youth and Family Ministries at the time, Diane Van Zero, saying how there wasn't enough, a lot of great songs for their teens. And I said, what kind of message, you know, do they want to hear? You know, what kind of message is empowering for them? And she told me, you know, messages like, you know, you're okay just the way you are, and I see you, I'm listening to you, I get you, those kind of things. So that's where the idea came, and I had the chorus and a verse or two, and I needed another verse, so I brought Sue Riley in, and she got her young niece Sage, now Sage Kanosh, to help with the last verse or two. So some of the lines, like the one that everyone's eyeing, you know, those little kind of cute lines like that came from Sage, and some from Sue too. So it was a fun process writing it, but I had that hook and everything in my head, you know how it goes sometimes, for 8 months or longer until you hit something or you find somebody that sparks with. So yeah, it's one of my favorite songs, one of my favorites to perform too.
Well, let's listen to "Who You People Happen." Yeah, right. Well, and the reggae thing always does that.
You can't miss with reggae. Come on.
Yeah, you can't miss. So let's listen to "Who You Really Are" by Richard McDeasy.
Star. I know who you are.
Thanks.
Yep, like we said, can't mess with reggae.
So you are a shining star, a light for the world to see. Who doesn't need to hear that? Come on now.
A light for the world to see. Yeah, it's a and catchy and everything too. A lot of times when those melodies and words come together just right, it's really, really magical. Because it can be the difference between a great song, you know, a good song and a great song, just the way a word falls into place or something into a line, you know.
So Richard, how did you get started with songwriting? How did, you know, where did that come from?
Well, my mom was the only musical person in the family, so we always had music. She was playing the piano. She was a prodigy, actually, playing at 4 and 5 years old, amazing classical music. So I started messing around. I took piano lessons and started writing songs, and I took a handful of songs I had written to Nashville when I moved there in 1977, and you know, that's just a songwriting town. You know, the people there said, this stuff ain't country, you should move to New York, it's not nasally enough, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, it was in 77, it was,
of course,
it was very country, and I was there in the 80s when it made its big transition over to pop and kind of what we now here is country music and not the old Hank Williams stuff. But what was the question?
Well, I was just asking you about your background, you know, so you went to Nashville. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Orlando, Florida, and I went to Nashville pretty much right out of college. I got a job offer in Nashville to play in a band for 3 months at the Holiday Inn Vanderbilt, the hottest club in town. It was right on the Vanderbilt University campus, right across from Centennial Park. And this band, the lead singer, the girl singer, knew me and said, we need a keyboard player, come on up. And now I want you to know, I'm not a keyboard player. I majored in trumpet all through college. Keyboard was something I picked up because I played keyboard with my left hand while I did trumpet with my right hand. And when my trumpet got stolen, I didn't know what to do with my right hand, so I picked up and kind of self-taught, you know, with the piano. But so I said, God, a three-month gig in Nashville, I've got these songs, I think I'm just gonna move. So I loaded up the truck and I moved to Nashville, Tennessee, that is. And I just so loved it there. It was just wonderful. I was there 22 years before I got a job at Unity Village and moved there. So in that time, a lot of song, you know, I really fell in love with songwriting. Didn't get any major cuts. A couple songs published, that's about it. And some unknown artists that cut a couple of my songs, but that was really the only success. Once I found Unity in about 1986, all my songwriting was posse music. It was this spirituality, this innocuous, non-religious, spiritual but not religious kind of messages. And, you know, it was just kind of aimed at that audience, because I became the musician for retreats at Unity Village. So for 5 years, people would come to Unity Village for retreats. I would play them songs and lead them in songs and write songs for them. And that's really where I got my used my chops from Nashville. But all of my music was meant to go out to churches, and they would bring me into their churches and they'd play my songs for them. So I did kind of the Unity Church circuit, kind of a big fish in a small pond thing for for years and never really got stuff out there.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, it sounds like a wonderful early part of your career, actually.
It was very much fun because I didn't have to tour to get my audience. The audience came to me at Unity Village.
Right.
They'd stay for a week and we do, you know, retreat for them, and they'd be familiar with me then. Come visit us in our church. So when that job ended, I just kind of went out and started touring then. And that was back in 2005.
Perfect. Well, you know, you mentioned your mother, and one of the songs on the Wall Free World album is Good as New.
Oh, I'm so glad you like the. Are you choosing that one to play?
Yeah, I think we need to play it, and then maybe we'll talk about it afterwards, if that's okay with you.
It's for my mom, Betty.
Here we go. Good as New, Richard McDeasy.
Before I was born, she sang to me. Her voice is my sweetest memory. There was Ella Sinatra, Moonlight Sonata, songs I still love today. Wherever she and Dad would go, they'd always be a part of the show. She would look in his eyes, sing him their song, then they dance the night away. Time can be both gentle and cruel. As it wears away the shimmering jewel, but it helps to see how, where she is now. She's as good as new. Christmas was her favorite thing. Everyone would come over to sing, and she'd play for hours without a break. The center of it all, the same man over 60 years. Being a mother was her career. There was always enough, though sometimes we're tough. She loved us through them all. Time can be both gentle and cruel. As it wears away the shimmer, it helps to see how, where she is now. She's as good as new. And I know she lives on, 'cause I feel my soul stir when somebody says, you remind me of.
If that doesn't bring a few tears to the audience, I don't know what will. That's guaranteed to moisten some eyes.
That you remind me of her line. I couldn't sing. I mean, I just had to. It took me many, many times before I could finally, you know, get through that line. But Mom was a great. She would hear classical music on the radio when she was just a kid and go to the piano and play it. And they had big plans for her, but she fell in love with my dad and decided to have three kids and moved to Orlando, Florida. So she was this huge talent, and there was no one else in my family ever that I even know of that was musical. But looking back on both sides of the family, as far back as I know, nobody did anything. My two brothers ahead of me, one tried drums, one tried clarinet. And I felt like, this is my mantle now. Mom's passing me the music mantle. I'm the youngest, and I'm gonna take up piano and carry on the legacy. So she would just love to play, you know, the song, the verse about the Christmas time, the house would fill up with 20 people, a tiny house. My dad kind of hated it, you know, when 20 people would get in there, and Mom would be at the piano playing her Christmas stuff. And then they'd always go out. She'd get asked to get up and play at all the Elks clubs and that they were members of. And it was always very sweet when she'd sing a song to Dad. And then, of course, you know, as they always do, she started losing her memory, and it would be very frustrating for her when she'd sing and couldn't remember words and maybe chords and stuff. So, you know, when she passed, it was sudden from a stroke. I just thought, you know, now she's where she's as good as new. She's probably singing away and the best voice she's ever had. She used to front jazz bands when she was younger too and everything. So it was a real, real blessing for me. I did not get any of her prodigious talent. I went to college for over 4 years, and still she could play better than I could. And she would play chords. I had no idea what they were. I said, that sounds great, Mom. What is it? She goes, I don't know. And I looked down and I was like, I was like an E flat diminished ninth augmented this. But she just had that ear. I never got that. I have to work at every little bit of talent I have now.
Well, you reference this, and I was actually going to ask you about it, and I'm going to now about performing a song like this live. Have you performed it live much or at all? Because it seems like it could be tough to get through without, you know, getting a catch in your throat.
Yeah, it was a few times. I've done it at Posse Fests and I've done it at church for Mother's Day. And like I said, it just took me a few times. A lot of times I would just have to play it over and over again until I could get through it. And then I would go to the, you know, to the performance or the morning or the evening when I would play it. I would just think, I'm performing a song. I didn't write this. I learned this song and I'm playing it like I would play a cover song. Try to keep my mind away from it while still maintaining the feel, you know, and tenderness, you know, that I want to convey for my mom. So people just, you know, really loved it. I thought it might be too specific, being about a mom who plays piano and that kind of stuff, to be universal for everybody. But it seems like a lot of people really related to it. At least
I think we all think of our mothers as having a talent. And I don't think saying that yours played piano, you know, they go, oh, like mine did this, like mine made cookies or mine cooked or, you know, whatever they did.
That could be
but
mom.
I understand that concern. Yeah. Yeah. That there's always that want to keep it universal. How specific can we get? Yeah.
Yeah. But you have to tell a story at the same time.
Right.
The constant conundrum.
And by the way, that was a Sue Riley again. She had been proud of me. You need to write a song about your mom. You need to write a song about your mom, because it had been 4 or 5 years. And I hadn't really processed it or you know, full out grieved it or anything. So I said, okay. So, you know, we sat down and kind of fleshed it out. And once it started being fleshed out a little bit, I just, you know, it just came to me. And so I'm really grateful to Sue for that too.
See, I think that, you know, that shows your talent, that you can just get downloads like that. You know, it might take a little prodding, but, you know, I think that, you know, certainly not everybody can do that.
I don't know, Harold Payne, man, he just like, what's
Harold's from another planet.
One of the most natural songwriters I've ever met, Karen Taylor Goodslock.
Constant downloads. I don't know. He's amazing.
He's been doing nothing but writing songs for 30, 40 years. He's been so successful at it. I mean, that's writing songs. I'm lucky if I get down, you know, and I probably wrote maybe 4 songs all last year, as busy as I was with other stuff. So, yeah, he's very, very natural. Yeah, whenever we have our writing retreats, everyone wants to write with Harold because they know they're
good. And he's such a sweetheart, too.
One of the most humble guys I know,
Now, next song up is, and this, I guess you could see this as a Sesame Street kind of thing, but I got a kick out of it. I Hate Hate. So let's listen to I Hate Hate by Richard Medici.
I see the children fighting on the evening news. With all the left and right, everyone's guaranteed to lose. I don't understand it. Why would we let hatred win? I wish somebody would just throw the towel in. 'Cause I hate hate, and I'd fight for peace. I'm intolerant of intolerance. I know that I don't practice what I preach, but I hate hate, and like a dragon I would slay it. Ooh, I love it if that's what it takes, 'cause I hate hate.
I think my favorite line is, I know I don't practice what I preach, but the don't is kind of swallowed. I had to go back and go, did he really say I don't? But yeah.
Like, I mean, don't you?
Yep.
I mean, it's just the iteration that made it kind of funny. And a friend to me said, yeah, I'm intolerant of intolerance. And yep. And I said, yeah, I'll fight for peace. And, you know, then that in there until something came up. But it's one of the few social commentary kind of songs that I've written. You know, as long as there's hate, we're never safe, no matter how many guns there are.
Right.
So we're going to throw that in there. I think it might be a little too over the head of some Sesame Streeters, but it's a mess.
Well, but I like the simplicity, because sometimes we get wrapped up in lots of big words and highfalutin ideas. But, you know, what really appeals to the child within us is what sticks, I think, often.
My wife didn't like it. She said, you should put out there that you hate anything. And I said, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, and a lot of people found the humor in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is kind of what I was going over. And Daniel I said, I'm afraid that people are going to take it too seriously. So he put the yeah, 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 ooh, oohs in there to make it really sound a little more campy than it was meant to be. But I think it still came out.
Yeah, that's fun. So how did you get into New Thought? That's was it by inspiration or desperation? Those are usually the two ways people come to it.
Desperation.
Okay.
There was a brief amount of time where I was homeless, another living out of the back of my truck and on whosoever couches would take me. And I was playing with my band in a Ramada Inn in Nashville. And there's a cocktail waitress there. I asked out because I needed a place to stay. Basically, would you like to, you know, hook up after we're done here? She goes, no, but if you want, I'll meet you at my church tomorrow. And I went, oh, okay. So the church was First Church Unity, the New Thought Church in Nashville, the Unity Church in Nashville. And I went there. She was not there. But I found my career path. I just fell in love with Unity, the philosophy. I fell in love with the church. Within 6 months, I was the choir director, music director. And that's where I started soaking in the kind of the New Thought message, and then starting to write songs there that I could use in services, and songs that I could use when I went played at other churches and things like that. And that's where people like Tom Kimmel and Karen Taylor Good, Janice Stanfield, Greg Tamblyn, they would all come to me wanting to play at the church. You know, Karen Taylor? And because they didn't have anywhere to play these songs. Their publishers wouldn't take them. Gospel music wouldn't take them. And a Unity New Thought church kind of place was the only place where they could really showcase their songs. Songwriters like Jess Leary would play there. From Orleans, John Hall from Orleans, Roseanne Cash, Kathy Matea, they all came, they all loved Unity Churches because there wasn't that religious Jesus music, but it was stuff that they could play their stuff there. So that's where I started writing most of that. And that's where I got into, writing. We just renamed it Posse Music after I saw all these people coming in, and it just occurred to me, this is its own genre. You know, there's nothing else like this. It's like they said, it's falling between the cracks of gospel and pop. It's not a whiny victim love song. You know, we sing about love and relationships, but it's not ooh baby baby kind of love, and it's not you know those kind of relationships, and. So I just wanted to bring the artists that made that music together under one roof. And that's where the idea for Empower Music and Arts came. And shortly after that, I got the job offer to move to Kansas City. Mm-hmm. So, that was a blessing, because on my last year at Kansas City for playing at a retreat, there was a woman who'd been to a couple retreats. Her name was Kathy G. And she's the one that said, the music you do, I've never heard music like that. It's what is it? And I said, well, we're kind of calling it posse music, I'm wanting to bring, there's a lot of artists out there doing that. How can I help? How can I help do this? So she helped incorporate Eye to Eye Ministries, which is what it started as. And we did our first two posse fests at the, not the YNTA, the International New Thought Alliance conferences every year. And Sue Riley was the music director for those. So that's where I met Sue, having to work with Sue to do the first two Posse Awards at their thing where she was in charge of the music. So that's where we met her. And by the second year, she was like, I love this. I want to be a part of it. And I said, well, you can be vice president.
Just happened to have an opening.
So, you know, and Sue's just been, she's really been more of a driving force in a power than I have as far as what she does. She's just much, much busier than I am with it. So we'll owe a lot of that to Sue and bringing together Russ Hammack. We're the three co-founders of Empower Music and Arts. And it started, you know, but that's where it started, at the INTA in Nashville there. And because I saw that there's a unique genre, the ultimate goal was to have Posse music a genre at the Grammys, to have its own genre, because it wasn't gospel, it was different from pop, and there was only one other message driven genre, and that was gospel and Christian. You know, it was defined by its message. Mm-hmm. And it's the only other music genre that's defined by its message, Posse music. I felt that we were different enough to where we could have our own genre, but of course I had no idea how to go about that.
Well, and the one thing that you're not mentioning that others might would be the whole new age genre, because there is overlap.
I think of new age as instrumental music. I don't you know, because we're that message oriented. That's why we don't have an instrumental category for George Winston type of stuff,
you know? right. But I think if you check out maybe the last few years, there are people doing music with lyrics, and it's spiritual in nature.
Well, what makes it new age instead of, as opposed to new thought? Kirtan kind of stuff that's chanty,
there is that. You know, a lot of the new age folks are influenced by the Indian Hinduism and Buddhism, you know, and they bring a lot of that to it. And even though they might have a rock or a jazz background, you know, so there's some of that that's out there that's, you know, that also has overlap with new thought.
Yeah. Okay. Because new thought's such a message, it's a, you know, message centric. I hadn't heard. I'd love to, whenever I search new age music, it's usually instrumental and synthesized stuff. So
sure.
I got to dive more deeply into that. And I would love for new age artists then to submit music, you know, for our yearly recognition then.
Right. I will, I'll share a little bit with you off of this interview.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. I'd be happy to. But getting back to the message at hand here, where it's all about you today, Richard.
Okay. Not all that other stuff.
One of the other tracks off your latest album that I really enjoyed and I want to share with people is this next one, The Way That I Am. So let's let them hear it, and then we'll talk about it afterwards.
Awesome.
I've heard true love is unconditional. For better or worse, they say. And honey, I know I'm no angel. Could you love me anyway? 'Cause if you want to know me, the whole expect to find some things that you may not want to. 'Cause I could hide who I am, I could change who I am, or you could love me the way that I am. I know you love me, but will you love me? The way that I am.
just starting down this road together. Already we're so far ahead, and I see boxes in your closet that you haven't opened yet. And if I'm gonna know you the whole way through, I'll expect to find some things you'll expect to find too.
What a great way to show off your vocal chops, Richard. You know, you really bring it on this one. Yeah. It's got great phrasing. You use the clean timbres, and then you get the cornbread in there, you know, the grit, you know.
And yeah, it definitely builds an intensity, and I put a lot of emotion into the song. It's one of the first real self-revealing songs. I'm trying to be more self-revealing in my music, because I've always just written new thought messages and inspirational messages and that kind of thing. And I was trying to be a little more vulnerable in my writing and bring it on. And I thought, maybe this is a universal message for a lot of people. Turns out it is. Daniel loved this song. He said it sounds like an old Motown song, but I wanted it to be a little more current sounding. But I think it still works, you know.
It works great. I think it's your strongest performance on the album, really.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's
like I said, the emotion is there. So
yeah, you rip it up.
Uh-huh. And I put a lot of thought into the music. Of course, I spoke for my own relationship, and you know, wanting to be. You know, we all want to try to please the person we're in a relationship with, and a lot of times it causes us to lose a little bit of who we are, and we just want to be accepted as we are, you know. Instead of me having to change who I am or hide who I am, I would just love it if you would just, you know, love me the way I am, you know, the way that I am. And I felt like that was a nerve that I hit when I came up with it. I said, yeah, I think a lot of folks would feel that way. You know, mm-hmm.
Definitely.
You know, can I ask you something kind of singer to singer here? Because I think to do that kind of performance that you did on that track is, it takes so much control, you know, because you're kind of going to all the extremes.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to know when you're going too far. You know, maybe that's not a thing for you. I sometimes will go too far and pay the price.
I went too far on a couple takes. You know, so we were, but I finally got it to where I could put the emotion in I wanted and still have the control on the notes and stuff. So it didn't sound like I was blowing it out, but yeah, took some practice.
Okay, so I'm not the only one.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you are, Al. Okay, my last pick, again from the Wall Free World album, is No One and Nothing.
Oh, that's an interesting pick.
Yeah, I thought it was just really fun. We had a choir director that there was a song, Nothing is Impossible with God, but she wouldn't let us sing that. We had to sing Everything is Possible. So I was glad that this came out and said, No One and Nothing, and went on from there. So let's listen to that, and then we'll talk about it. No One and Nothing.
Woo! Okay, listen up. Against me, that's right. I know no one and nothing is against me. The universe conspires to lift my spirits higher and higher, and I know no one and nothing is against me. Sing it now. I know no one and nothing is against me. No one and nothing. I know no one and nothing is against me.
Of course, you can give shout outs to the additional singers on this one too.
Oh yeah, good. And of course the songwriter.
So I missed that on the album Notes. Who did write this?
The song's very special to me because it's the only song I have ever co-written with Penny Nichols, who started the Summer Song Songwriting Camp, whom so many of our artists are part of. David Roth, Sloan Wainwright, Sue Riley manage it every year. It's a beautiful experience, songwriting camps, Summer Songs, and it's a not-for-profit. And Penny passed away 4 or 5 years ago, and I'm just so glad that I was able to write this little song with her. And the idea, No One and Nothing Is Against Me, comes from the Reverend Gary, not Gary Chapman. Oh, I'm sorry, Gary, I forgot your last name. I'm under pressure. there's a book, No One and Nothing Is Against You. And he also wrote a book, The Eye of the Storm, with his wife. And so the idea for that line came from there. And then Penny just popped out the melody and a couple of the first lines. And then from there, it was just a matter of adding some more thoughts to it. And the singers you hear are the singers from my church band, Boyd Black and Lily Scott. And of course, you probably recognize Harold Payne on the third verse. I had to bring Harold in to sing that third verse. And Boyd and Lily are excellent talents. I'm so fortunate to have them on my team at church. It makes getting the music together every Sunday so much easier when those guys, you know, they're just on it. I always picture this as this arena song.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, we'll see. It still may have a life of its own. All these songs may have lives.
Yeah,
they surprise you. They're like your children, right? You put them out in the world and you just have no idea what they're going to do.
I just got to put these out in the world and then we'll see.
That's it. Just like children. Got to let them go.
There we go.
I'm really glad you're focusing on this album. My other ones have been around a while, but this was probably not the most, the least known.
Right. Well, we're happy to do that, you know, and it's such a thrill to finally get to meet you and talk to you. You know, you've been on, like I said, you've been on my list for a long time, and we've just been on different paths, different parts of the world. And one of the songs that's not off this album, in fact, the song that we're going to do is not off this album, is it's getting better every minute.
Oh, way to go.
And you know, for those of our listeners who haven't heard this song, turn it up right now. We're going to play Getting Better Every Minute. Richard McDeasy.
It's getting better every minute. Getting better every day. It's getting better every minute. It's getting better every day. I know a man, he's got more troubles than you do. Lives his life mouth to hand, like an Indian guru. And he never complains, and he never looks back. And when he talks about tomorrow, it's a matter of fact. He says, it's getting better. It's getting better every minute.
So, wow, could a song feel any better than that song?
I have a lot of high hopes for that song. I thought it's very cuttable for anybody, any genre. You know, it's the message and everything. And there's a minister at church who I would ask, not at church, at Unity Village, Jerry. No matter if he could be on death's bed, and if you'd ask Jerry how he was, he would say, "I'm magnificent. I'm magnificent." You know, I said, "I need an I'm magnificent." So I got the "I'm getting better every minute" idea, and it's one of those that had a chorus for like a year. Of course, the chorus is just one line. Yeah. And before I kind of like, so where does it go from here? Where does it go? You know, and I don't know what happened with. The download, like you say, when you open up to creativity, it'll just come to you. And it's like, well, why wasn't that there? And the cool thing with those things is that years later, sometimes months later, you look back and say, I don't even remember coming up with that. That's a great line. Like, who wrote that?
Exactly.
But because you were really not, you know, it didn't come from our conscience, you know, our conscious.
Right.
Conscience.
What album is this one on?
That one's called "Getting Better Every Minute." It's one of the really, really good New Thoughts albums. It was early enough to where I've written some songs on. There's some songs on there that I would not play today, because they don't really align with New Thought beliefs. But the majority of those songs I thought are really good. And the Rich Fagan song on there is the "God Is" song, "Wherever We Are, God Is." And it combines two prayers, you know, for that. And that song and "Getting Better Every Minute" had kind of been my signature songs for many, many years, until I disappeared off the map, kind of. those two from there were songs. Like I said, we're bumper stickers and that kind of thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you know, getting better every minute. Honestly, it's new to me. It's brand new to me. So I know it's going to be an earworm, and I'm going to have to go out and perform it. You know.
And that whole album is kind of like it's an album of demos. You know, that's not a great record. I really would like to do that song again. And get it to get a little more, you know, it's got the canned drums and everything, but I just wanted to put that feel across, that party feel, and captured that. But I'm going to have to re-record that someday.
Yeah, I would have to hear it to be convinced, because it really has a great groove.
Oh, good, good. I'm glad you feel that way.
So,
thank Yamaha for that.
What's that? Pardon me?
Thank Yamaha for that. that was one of the grooves from out of my Yamaha PX900 or something.
So, you know, do you want to give any shout outs to any of the musicians you've been songwriters and singers? You know, I don't know, you're probably playing keyboards, but you probably got some guitar players or drummers or bass players maybe, or horn players, I don't know, that worked with you on, at least on this latest album, or is that all Daniel?
You know, it was, a lot of it was Daniel plus musicians that he brought in to do the tracks. So on that album, Daniel and did most of the instrumental stuff there, and I did most of the keyboard stuff, and would send those to him. So I did not have, and I did Lily and Boyd. I recorded their vocals here, but I didn't have any other musicians. Tom Kimmel sang a little backup on "Well and Rockin'," but didn't play. So as far as any other musicians on that album to shout out to, you know, not really.
Okay.
Right now, they're all studio musicians, most of them from LA. And I did the "Well and Rockin'." I did here in my studio. I played all those instruments. So yeah. But I just want to shout out to all the Posse artists out there who are still coming together. writing songs. You know, when we started to bring these artists together, they started writing together and the bar went way up. And we just had a writing retreat, virtual writing retreat, just a week ago, 2 weeks ago. And every 2 hours, there were 3 2-hour sessions for 2 days, and dozens of people came together, and Sue had them all paired off. And like another 12 or 15 awesome songs came from that writing retreat. So, you know, the work we're doing, really focusing on the writers and writing great songs that'll go out there, because I believe that publishing the music and keeping the music out there, you know, in different arrangements and getting them recut and cut is the real secret to spreading this stuff out.
So for anyone who's listening, who is interested in the Posse Awards, interested in the songwriting retreats, or interested in you, where would they go to find out that information?
I gave up my website and just moved everything over to the Empower Music and Arts website. So Empower Music and Arts has all my music, and with my email. Well, my email is richard@empowerma.com. So I could tell anybody who would like to get in touch with me that way. And my music can all be purchased at Empower, and that's sheet music, singles, albums, whatever you want there. And my contact information would be there, or you can contact me through business@empowerma.com. Anything that goes to Empower usually comes to me and Sue. So
perfect.
I'd love to hear from you, especially if you have questions about songs you're writing. I love to look at lyrics and tell you if they're Posse. Sometimes we'll get songs that are a little too religious, you know, to be Posse music. And you know, so I like to go, you know, look at lyrics with new songwriters and things like that. So you know, please let me know if you have any questions whatsoever.
That's really sweet.
And we've been playing a lot of music off of this album and, you know, and the one, the Getting Better Every Minute that we just played. Is there one more that you think we should close out with that, you know, that speaks to you?
Well, the one that comes to my mind first is Doing What I Do Best, the opening song on Wall Free World, because that's another one of those songs about, I'm just so grateful to be able to do this. And Ricky Byers loved this song. She was when I did it last year at the convention, and you know, when I get a compliment like that from a songwriter like her, I take it, you know, really seriously. But Doing What I Do Best is just a song of my gratitude about being able to do this, being able to play music, being able to write and meet such awesome, talented songwriters. I don't think I'd ever have a chance to write with J.D. Martin or you know, Daniel Namat or Patricia Bahia without Empower. And so, you know, I feel really fortunate to be able to do that. So that's really Doing What I Do Best is kind of like, you know, thank you, universe.
Excellent. Well, we've been talking with Reverend Richard McDeasy, and we're going to close out with Doing What I Do Best.
Oh, can I say something before you do that?
Of course.
All the backup vocals on this were done by Gerald White, who's one of the best song vocal coaches in LA. He's one of the top five people that everybody calls to sing backups on their songs. Amazing voice and amazing vocal teacher, and good friends with Daniel Namat. So he got Harold to come in and do all the backgrounds you hear on this are just Harold. Gerald White does all the backups on it, and the backups are awesome. So thank you.
Yes, they are. So here we'll probably hear some on this.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about. That's all Gerald.
All right. Doing What I Do Best, Reverend Richard McDeasy.
This is how I want to spend my time. This is how I want to spend my time. This is how I want to spend my time. Doing what I do best. I'm doing what I do gets me high. And if I'm not just getting by, if I'm passing every test, well, I must be doing what I do best. This is how I wanna pass my days. This is how I wanna pass my days. This is how I wanna pass my days. Doing what I do best. I'm doing what I do best. If I never get the blues, and life is too good to be true, if the answer is always, this is how I